Happy Wednesday! Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Sheer Crime. I'm Kenzie.
And I'm Amy.
This week, we are going back to the Killer Speaks series on Hulu and covering the case on Earl Forrest. Earl Forrest grew up in California and from an early age lived a drug-filled life. At just 17 years old, he was already using meth on a regular basis. It didn't take long for him to start dealing drugs and becoming an extremely successful meth dealer in the area. Earl would meet his good friend Toddy, which would change the course of his life. After moving across the country with Toddy to Missouri, Earl thought he could finally get out of the drug scene and start fresh. Not long after arriving in Missouri, though, Toddy starts having money problems and begs Earl to get her in touch with his drug dealer. After several months, Earl finally gives in and connects his friend with a contact from his drug dealing days. However, this didn't come without a price. When payment came due and nothing was collected, he downed a bottle of liquor and went after revenge. This anger-filled morning would quickly end in a shootout with police and three people dead. What prompted this extreme act of violence seemingly out of nowhere? Let's jump in. Well, hi. It's been so long since I've seen
Hello.
You.
I always think of Mrs. Doubtfire.
Hello. I love that movie.
Best movie.
I love that. So we are on episode number 2 for the night.
Yes.
Episode 50.
50.
Big
bitches.
Number. We finally made it to episode 50.
Of actual episodes.
Actual episodes, not including the minisodes or the little... get to know us type stuff.
Yeah, those bullshit episodes we just throw in there for something to listen to.
They were fun.
They were unscripted.
This week we're covering another episode on The Killer Speaks.
That's right.
With Earl Forrest. This one is really, it's weird. It's really strange. I don't know. I feel like this guy has a lot of issues, a lot of pent up anger. I don't know,
man. Big dick energy. That's all I got.
Or what he thinks.
Yeah.
So we are, if you can remember from last week, we are still drinking our Apothic Crush.
We are.
I mean, why not? Let's just finish the bottle. It was a new bottle when we first started. We might as well finish it at this point.
Who wants some old stinky bottle sitting in their fridge?
Exactly. So we will cheers to that.
Cheers. I have to pour out my M&Ms.
Yes, we have our little treat, our chocolate treat. Yes, so good, but definitely stronger than our Roscato.
Bit stronger. I stood up to pee. Got a little dizzy.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't going to like pee here.
Right.
I stood up
right.
to go Thankfully. To the bathroom.
Yes. Yes. We had a little bit of a break in between, which was nice. Now we're ready to go. Without further ado, Amy, if you want to start us off this week on Earl Forrest.
Alrighty. So we start off in Mineral Point, Missouri. And we get our killer. Our killer is speaking to us. Hence the name Killer Speaks. And he says, quote, "My name is Earl Forrest. I'm 63. I have 3 death sentences," end quote. Yikes.
I mean.
Straight into the point.
It's great, but.
Which part?
The 3 death sentences. I just don't understand it. I mean, I think it's just to like give some, what am I trying to say? Some closure to the victims' families, maybe. But like, he only has one life. So how is he.
He got the death penalty 3 times.
That's what I'm saying. Well, but, like, why give him 3 when he can only live through 1 death sentence? You know what I mean? Like, I get why they're trying to charge him with every single murder he committed. Get it. But, like, there's some that are like, oh, he got 1,000 years in prison. It's like, he's not going to live that long. There's no way. Especially when they're, like, already in their 50s or 60s, you know?
I don't know. I say send him out into the yard with a bunch of people who are really mad with bags of soap. Or like bricks.
Beat the shit out of them.
Just beat the shit out of them. It's December 9th of 2002. It's in the early morning. Earl Forrest guns down 2 people, one of them being his closest, oldest friend, then began a bloody shootout with law enforcement ending in the death of a beloved deputy sheriff. We meet former Dent County prosecutor James Gray, and he says that Earl comes off as a nice person, but he turns out to be a vicious killer. Earl says, quote, "I'm like a split personality. I'm a nice guy, but I'm mean. I can be, you know, dangerous," end quote. I mean, same.
Yeah, he was a really interesting character to try and...
He reminded me of, like, just an old school, like, biker guy. Like, biker gang kind of guy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. There wasn't much sadness in his eyes or, like, even... There wasn't really remorse. So you can tell that there's something mentally not right there. But he's not, like... I didn't find him super intimidating.
Not at all. Like, I could probably sit down in a room with him and... I honestly, the way that he talked, I could be like, yeah, I could sit here and listen to you. Like, if he read me bedtime stories, I could, like, listen to that and fall asleep. His voice is very soothing.
I just didn't feel scared.
No. Like, would I want to turn my back on him? No.
Probably not. And would I want to promise him something and not...
Deliver
on that promise? No.
No. Do I want to braid his hair? Yes.
No, it's stinky. 1000%.
No way. He totally takes care of himself.
Even though they said he's very well groomed, stinky. He's an old guy. He has old man smell. He stinks.
Old men all smell.
Yes. Well, he looks kind of stinky. He looks like a stinky guy. I don't really know.
I don't get that. His hair shined. It looked fluffy.
But you're still soft. In prison. You cannot be getting good hygiene products. There's
just
no
saying,
way.
I'm just saying I want to braid his hair. We meet Dr. Sasha Bardet, and he's that forensic psychiatrist that comes in and out of some of these episodes. It's him, and then there's Dr.
Schlesinger.
Mm-hmm. Good. Good one. I was like, I'm going to get this, but it's going to take a little bit of editing to get there.
They go back and forth. They must be the ones that they kind of utilize throughout all of the episodes, which is kind of nice because we kind of understand who they are. And
Yeah. And he says that Earl Forrest developed sort of a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde type of a personality thing. He could be friendly, seductive, engaging, but also cold, ruthless, and violent, which is, I mean, why I think I want to braid his hair.
I'm going to pass on the braiding the hair.
I just want to have him talk to me while I braid his hair. Okay? But we want to know, how did he end up executing his best friend of 30 years, seemingly without remorse, right? Earl says, quote, "Somebody burns you, you just go take their shit. You go into their house. It's not their house anymore. It's your house. Everything in it's yours, including his wife. Whatever, you know," end quote. Is this Pirates of the Caribbean? Do we just go take over people's houses and commandeer their wives? Like, no.
It was a really strange thing to say, especially on camera. It's like, what?
I even wrote down, how about no?
What movie is that from?
I don't know. Why do I feel like it's Austin Powers? But it's not.
It might be. It might be.
How about no? I don't. Somebody's going to have to comment on this one. But it's weird. And then he says, quote, "That's it. Call it even. They did you wrong, so you do them wrong," end quote. Okay, I get that part of it. But the rest of it? You don't just go take someone's fucking house.
He's really a strange character, for sure.
Yeah. It is still December 9th of 2002. We're in Salem, Missouri. Now, let me just preface this by saying, if you watch this episode, the amount of times that you're going to hear December 9th of 2002, we could turn this into a drinking game. You'd be shit-faced halfway through it.
Oh, yeah.
I literally wondered when I was watching this, how many commercial breaks did they take? Because it's like they had to say it so many times.
And the entire crime from when it's committed to when he's in handcuffs happens in one day.
It's all within like
hours.
4 hours.
Yeah, it's not long. So just know we're never leaving December 9th.
It's always December 9th, 2002. It's 2 weeks before Christmas, and a man calls into the Dent County Sheriff's Office to report a shooting in his home. But he manages to escape with his life. Sergeant Henry Folsom of the Missouri Highway Patrol tells us that he and his partner had just finished fueling their vehicle when they were notified of a double homicide in Dent County. The sheriff was requesting assistance. Upon arrival, they find a man dead on the living room sofa. Sergeant Folsom tells us that he will never forget this image. The man had suffered a gunshot wound to the right eye socket.
Oh, it's so just gory to think about.
And he says that his death appeared to be instantaneous because his cigarette was still burning in his hand.
Crazy.
Yeah, that's some like on the ball, like we're there. You call us, we're there.
And thankfully, I mean, not that you'd want to die being shot in the eye, but thankfully it was instantaneous, so he didn't feel anything.
Yeah, I think if that's how it's going to go, make it instantaneous.
Yeah.
A second body is found just down the hallway in a bedroom. A woman is lying on the floor, shot in the head. Sergeant Folsom explains that she had suffered multiple gunshot wounds to the hands, legs, and arms, all defensive wounds. And it was obvious that she'd been injured at several points throughout the residence. So there's clearly, like, blood in multiple places. Blood evidence,
yeah.
51-year-old Harriet Smith, known by her friends as Toddy, is the homeowner. The man in the living room was her neighbor, 41-year-old Mike Wells. Sergeant Folsom says that the carnage that day was haunting and just could not be explained. Earl tells us, quote, "This whole thing would have been avoided if, you know, we just, everybody had done what they said they would have. Everybody would have been happy and alive," end quote. I wrote, okay, psycho.
Of course he's blaming the victims here. He's putting the blame.
Not at fault.
Of course, he's saying that if they would have kept their word, or if Toddy would have kept her word, this would have never happened and innocent people wouldn't have been killed, including herself, right?
Right.
If she would have just done what she said she was going to do, they'd all be alive and well. It's like, take some fucking responsibility. You were in prison for killing these people. You did it. You had a choice.
Yep.
You had a choice to say no to killing people, but you did it anyway.
He didn't have a choice.
And I think we see this so often in these cases where they do not want to have the blame on themselves. They push it off to everyone else, specifically the victim, saying that if they hadn't done X, Y, and Z, if they just did this and this and this, everything would be fine today. It's right. Like, I'm sorry. That's not how this works.
No.
That's not how this works. Like, you're a person, and you can make your own decisions, and you made a bad decision.
He's a big boy.
You killed someone. That was your choice.
Yep.
It's infuriating. It's really...
annoying.
It is to know that they're blaming the victims for this stuff.
That there are giant babies out there wielding guns.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, Toddy had been one of Earl's closest friends for over 30 years. Earl says that he had known Toddy since probably around 1970. The nickname had been given to her from her dad, and it just must have stuck because that's how he had been introduced to her. Not as Harriet, but as Toddy. Her husband and Earl were in Boy Scouts together, and they had ran into each other at the supermarket, and his friend had introduced him to his wife, Toddy. Well, Toddy and Earl hit it off right away, and they became fast friends even after she and her husband, Mr. X Boy Scout, had divorced.
Yeah.
Earl says that it was not a sexual relationship. They were more like brother and sister. They would call each other brother and sister. But then he goes on to say, quote, you know, just a couple times. Because we just happened to be there, you know? End quote.
What does that mean?
So it's not a sexual relationship normally. Just a couple times.
Because he said, we just happened to be there. I'm like, beware in each other's presence and you were
in
horny.
In each other's pants. You know, like brothers and sisters.
Yes. But overall, besides whatever the hell that was.
They weren't a couple.
They were friends.
That's what they were trying to, what he was trying to say. They were never a couple. There just was a couple of nights, I guess.
Who knows? Yeah. But they were friends. They had their separate relationships with people and they stayed friends for 30 years, just really being friends.
Yeah. They were super close. And their relationship at times were even deeper than some of Forrest's marriages. So, like very, very close. Dr. Bardet says that the way he describes his relationship with Toddy makes one think that in many ways they were like a married couple, but that basically Toddy was like the only one true partner that Earl had ever had. We meet one of Earl's friends, Susan Nomastro, and she says that they were so close, Earl and Toddy. She says that they were happy and really fun-loving together as a couple.
And Earl trusted Toddy. You know, he really trusted her and confided in her. And that's what kept them so close for 30 years. And that's what makes all of this so fucking crazy to me.
Right.
Like 30 fucking years of being friends with someone. That's how old I am right now. I mean, I feel like I've been alive for a decent amount of time.
Yep.
30 years is a long time.
Yeah.
It's truly a long time. And to actually say that you've had a friend that long, that's even a harder thing to say.
Yeah, I don't think I could say that.
Yeah. That rarely happens with people. Yeah. You know, people move on and change, but they really were tied together.
For sure. Earl says that she used to own a bar called Hot Toddies. Love.
Love. That. Love. Oh, my God. That. Oh, my God. How cute is that name?
Super cute. And he says that he'd hang out there all the time. And it was like the only hippie bar in the area. He also said that she had this really super sweet voice that basically got her anything she wanted, and that it was really fun to watch her work because I bet she made a crap ton of money.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
Just by being a little sweet hustler.
And for having a fucking bar with an awesome name. Come on. Who wouldn't want to go into that bar? Let's be real.
No, for real. I mean, neither one of us could come up with a cool name for a bar like that with our names.
I know. And that is her actual name that people call her. So like, how much more perfect could it have been?
Love it.
In 1998, Toddy left California and went to Missouri to take care of her family's farm after her father passed away. Toddy really wanted Earl to make this move to Missouri with her. Earl tells us that Toddy had sent him real estate brochures and he realized that he would be able to buy a house and property for really cheap in Missouri. Again, they were living in California.
Pretty much the worst place ever.
One of the most expensive places to live in the U.S. probably besides New York.
Right. Also, who are these people who leave their lives to go and work at a farm that their parents owned once they died? Not me. I would have sold that shit immediately. Yeah. I don't want to tend to horses and cows and shit.
Yeah, no. I mean, okay.
The answer's no.
Like my husband's family, they kept their family farm in the family and they wanted to sell it, but they sold it to my husband's brother. So now it's still in the family. And
but that's one thing.
He wanted
to take it, right?
Yeah, he did want to take it.
Yeah, see, like, would you want to just go and start
taking
care of animals?
Absolutely not. I do not like shoveling shit. Like, that is not happening. I don't even pick up my own dog shit. My husband does that.
Oh, yeah, mine too.
They can deal with the shit outside. That's their job.
I deal with the shit inside, they deal with the shit outside.
Exactly, exactly. Now, Earl decided to follow her and bought a house on 7 acres just outside of Salem, Missouri. He was able to have a fresh start and they were able to hang out with each other still. It was really important to him. He was still close to Toddy, but now he could finally, hopefully, turn his life around.
Right.
He even says, quote, she was good people, end quote. And again, I have to ask, then why the fuck did you kill her?
It wasn't him.
I just hate this. I just hate his hair.
It's full of secrets.
That Monday morning, he had woken up at 6:30 a.m. and opened a new bottle of bourbon. I'm literally puking thinking about waking up at 6:30 in the morning and opening a bottle of bourbon and drinking
thinking
it.
How terrible it sounds to wake up at 6:30 in the morning.
That too. Yuck. That too. And drinking bourbon at that hour, I can't even imagine.
I mean, it was a Monday. I can relate.
Okay, I do see that. But he goes on to say it only took him 2 hours to complete it. So think about that. He had downed a brand new bottle of bourbon by 8:30 a.m. on a Monday morning. Oh my God.
No.
There's no way. The smell of bourbon to me. I get the dry heaves. Like, it's just, I can't. I can't imagine. And I'm not a real big, like, drinker with
liquor.
That's not necessarily my thing. I like wine. I like beer. That's kind of where I say sometimes in the summer I'll do mixed drinks with vodka, but it's when I can't taste it. Like, I can't taste what's in it. I'm definitely not a sipper of liquor. Like,
no. And I have to have a straw. That shit's going down quick.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
There is a purpose that I'm drinking this.
Now, we learn that there had been a disagreement between him and Toddy for over a year, and this morning he had decided to confront her about it. Earl said that at this time, his girlfriend Angela had came to his house and he told her, let's go for a ride. He was unsure what his intentions were at that time, but he did carry a gun with him. Okay, so he knew he was choosing violence at some point.
Or maybe a scare tactic. But yeah.
Like, he had to have thought, like, okay, violence is on my mind, so I need to, like, protect myself in some way because I'm angry. So I'm mad.
He woke up that morning and chose violence.
Yes, he did. Earl tells us that he only recalls snapshots of the events that day when they unfolded because, remember, he's now drunk. Okay, he drank that whole bottle of bourbon. He's driving over to Toddie's house. Drunk, and he barely remembers driving over there. Okay, that's one red flag right there. Angela, get out of the goddamn car. Like, your drunk boyfriend is driving you to his friend's house to confront her in an angry rage. It's not going to end well.
10 a.m.
It's not going to be great. Like, get out of the vehicle. At 10:45, they arrive at Toddie's house, and he sees something he did not expect. Earl tells us that there were two cars in the driveway. One was hers, and the other was their friend Mike's. Not only was Toddie his friend, Mike was also his friend.
Right.
Okay, so that makes this whole situation, again, very, very sad. It's very confusing. Earl believes that Toddie knew she had made a mistake. He busted in her house and immediately had his gun up. Apparently, Earl had done something for Toddie, and Toddie was supposed to do something for him, but never did. At this point in the documentary, you guys, he literally will not tell us what it is. He just kept saying, she didn't keep to her word. She was supposed to do something for me and didn't. And I'm like, spit it out, Earl. Fucking tell me. What was it? What didn't she do? He was being really evasive at this point in the documentary. I'm like, God damn it. Come on. Tell me what the fuck you're talking about right now so I can understand. I didn't understand.
It's okay. We'll figure it out.
Now, Earl had developed this twisted moral code in Northern California being a meth dealer. Earl explains that he had always been a drug dealer. It was all he did in the 80s. He only sold meth. He was getting pounds and pounds of meth right from the guy who was cooking it, usually $25,000 worth at a time. That's a fuck ton of meth.
That's like $4 million nowadays. Just kidding.
No joke. That's a fucking lot of meth. And in the drug scene, he was basically at the top of the pyramid.
Yeah.
He would sell to just a few people who would go sell to more drug dealers who would then sell to the users. So he was so far up the chain, he was never actually selling to users.
Nope.
Like, he was selling to just a few people. So he was making bank because he was getting it right from the source.
Yeah. He was kind of like George Young in the movie Blow.
Yeah.
With cocaine.
Exactly. Yep.
He was the George Young of the meth scene in the 80s.
And he made a fuck ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
He made a lot of money. And being that high up on this meth chain, a lot of people really respected him. And
yeah.
Earl put it as they thought of him like God.
Yeah.
Like, people really, really set him on a higher pedestal, and he loved that.
Yeah, he was like a celebrity.
It fed his ego, for real. He loved all the praise from these people.
I mean, I don't blame him.
We meet his daughter, Lisa Krishna Suchan. Hopefully I'm saying that right.
You made that sound real fancy.
It's probably Suchan. Suchan? Suchan?
I would have just said Lisa.
I'll refer to her as Lisa. That's a tough one. Now, she tells us that he was really suave and attractive in his younger years, and he had a lot of really good friends that he had known for a long time. Again, she's kind of playing on how respected he was in the community he was living at when he was, you know, this high-up meth dealer.
Oh, yeah. He was a fox.
And he always had a girl by his side. That was important to him.
Well, of course.
And it was probably easy for him, too.
Well, yeah. He was good-looking.
Dr. Bardet says that he got the sense that Earl was someone who is really narcissistic. He was very proud of his appearance and takes a lot of pride in what his image is to others. Even while in prison, he is still really well-groomed and put together.
What was that, Kenzie? He was what?
He was, but I know his hair is stinky. He does not have good hygiene product.
He even shakes his hair like a rock star.
You know
that guys can wash their head to toe with a bar of fucking soap and they have the best hair, the best scalp, but us?
That's true.
No. We have 15 fucking products just to maintain decent looking hair.
It's not that he has long hair that bothered me. It's that it's not cut. I hate when men don't cut their long hair and it's all jaggedy on the edge. I think the hairstylist in me comes out and I'm like, it's disgusting looking.
Yeah,
it
because
looks
it,
gross
because
to me.
We both know that it needs a trim.
Yes. It probably needed a trim years prior, but you know, it just keeps breaking off
but
and it looks horrible.
That.
They don't do that.
See, what he needs is a good braid.
Probably. probably does. Keep it up.
Maybe like a nice top knot.
Now, this lifestyle had eventually caught up with Earl. He eventually got caught dealing meth and was sentenced to a 4.5-year prison sentence. Only 4.5 years? That does not seem
long. That's a lot of meth.
Apparently, he didn't get caught being the top of the chain and having all that meth in his possession. He must have been caught selling a small portion to someone, I would assume.
Yeah.
Because if it would have been that $25,000 worth of meth that he had, he would have been in prison the rest of his goddamn life.
Yeah. Like, he probably just got caught with a small amount.
That's what I'm assuming. And when Earl got released, he was a 51-year-old with no prospects. This was around the same time that Toddie had told him about Missouri, and this was his opportunity for change and for a new life. Earl tells us that when he first went to Missouri, he was having a good time working 5 days a week at a sawmill and staying clean. He really did want to change his life, and he was finally happy about it. Dr. Bardet elaborates more on how he had been in and out of jail quite a few times, and now he wasn't this young 20 to 30-year-old guy who was able to do the time and get out. He right. knew that, like, he was, you know, coming up on the end of his life, potentially. I mean, he was well past probably the halfway point at that time. So any new charges, he might be in prison the rest of his life.
Yeah. Well, and he's seeing himself. He's no longer that young buck,
exactly.
Right? Like, you're seeing phases change. Like us, where we see people driving and we're like, Jesus, they're like 12. And then we're like, oh, my God. Like, yeah. You're of driving age.
Yes. Yes. It's crazy.
Or the worst part, what year were you born?
91.
Fuck. So I was good. Well, no, this works for you. So you know that when we get our IDs checked at like the liquor store, they don't check to see what year we were actually born.
Oh, I
they
know.
Check to see if there's a 19 in front of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's what?
It's bizarre.
What?
Well, yeah, because if you think about it, people who were born in 2000 are now 22 years old.
That's disgusting.
I know.
That makes me want to throw up.
I know. Now, unfortunately for Earl, just as he was wanting to leave the drug business, Toddie wanted to get into it. This is when he found out that she had been struggling to make ends meet on the farm and saw a quick fix with dealing meth. She knew how much money he used to make. She knew that that could be a quick turnaround of money and it could finally get her life back on track because she couldn't afford this farm. Mm-hmm. Toddie had continually bugged him for months and months to have him help her get set up with a dealer. And he would always tell her no, but she just kept on asking him. Earl finally did cave in and agreed to help his best friend, but he wanted something in return from her. Earl said that the deal was, Earl would introduce his dealer in California, but in return, he wanted Toddie to buy him a riding lawnmower and a trailer to pull behind it. Earl's third wife had taken all of his original stuff and sold it. So he, at one point, had a lawnmower and it would have been fine to use it, but his wife had sold it and he had nothing anymore.
Yeah, we even see a cute little picture of him on said lawnmower.
Yes. And now that he had land and everything in Missouri, he obviously needed something to mow it with. And that's all he asked for. He knew that she was going to be making a lot of money and that this lawnmower and trailer would be just a small fraction for of sure. what she was actually going to make. So he didn't think he was asking for much. According to Earl, Toddie had agreed to this deal. And shortly after meeting with this dealer, she was getting meth shipped to her by the pound. How the hell was she getting it shipped to her?
It was the 80s.
I mean...
No, it wasn't. It was 2002. It was 2000.
But like, is that stuff not checked? Was
not
it like hidden? Was
There's
it
like
hidden in something?
No, what is it? Is it like UPS or FedEx? One of the two where they're like... We don't check. I've like talked to a couple of people who like work there and they're like, oh yeah, we constantly have like packages come through that reek of weed. Whatever. We don't give a shit.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. I would have thought that they would have, I don't know. I just think it would be more of a
I think meth
secure
is probably
process.
Something
I don't
you
know.
Could easily obscure though.
Yeah, because I guess that doesn't smell like anything, does it? I mean, I've never been around
My
it.
Guess is it's going to smell very chemically because it's made out of...
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But if it's packaged in, like, packaging, you probably wouldn't even smell it, right?
Right. Pack around some coffee, you'll never smell shit.
Yeah. I guess. Earl knew that Toddie was making a lot of money from her drug dealing. Clearly, he had done it before, so he was well aware of estimating the earnings she was making off of this meth. And over the next year and a half, every time he saw her around town, she would be driving a different car. Oh, shit.
Damn.
This does not sound good. Now, even though she was buying all of these new things for herself, Earl tells us that Toddie never held up her end of the bargain. He goes on to say that once Toddie didn't answer three of his phone calls, he knew exactly what was going on, and he knew that she wasn't going to do what she said she would. He knew that she could have easily sold 2 ounces and have been able to afford to buy him his tractor and trailer. Dr. Bardet weighs in and thinks Earl knew that Toddie was living the life that he used to live, and she was benefiting off of his contacts, and he was getting nothing out of it.
Yeah.
I think he was jealous. Uh-huh. He was pissed off. He didn't think he asked for much from her. He knew that she only had to sell a small portion of this meth to be able to afford what he was asking from her.
Right.
And now she was blowing him off.
Yeah.
So now he's even getting more pissed about the fact that, wow, my fucking best friend is really fucking not going to talk to me now because she doesn't want to buy me this fucking lawnmower and trailer. And now she's making all this money for herself and I'm getting nothing.
And I introduced her to that.
Right.
Yeah.
Fuck that. Right. She wouldn't have had any of this if it was not for me.
I think it's clear. Toddie deserved to die. Plain and simple.
I mean, I think it could have been handled differently. I think he could have used a scare tactic instead of fucking brutally murdering these people. You know what I mean? Be pissed. Have the conversation with her and scare her if you need to, but actually murdering her, no. I don't think that that was necessary. I think if you would have had the one conversation and fucking scared her enough, it would have been done the next day.
For sure.
Then you could fucking move on, you know, and just live your life again. But again, he was drunk. He probably wasn't thinking clearly. Who the hell knows? It really upset Earl because he had known her for so long and he didn't understand why she would do this to him. Dr. Bardet says that you could feel his anger in the air and it didn't take much to push him over the edge. Earl thinks that Toddie thought, well, he's over 50 now. In his mind, Toddie thought he was a punk and wouldn't do anything about it. He was just going to live with it and he wasn't going to do anything to her. They've been friends so long, he's not going to do anything to me.
Well, he's too old to do anything now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's decrepit.
Right.
Like Laverne.
Yeah. Right. Dr. Bardet says that he basically was feeling like he was losing his sense of self-worth and power over people. He's not making himself feel bad. Toddie is the one doing this to him. So now she needs to pay for that.
It's now 10:47 a.m. on December 9th, 2002. That's like the fourth time we've said it. No, you all better be drinking. Earl is standing in Toddie's living room with a gun. Toddie's neighbor Mike Wells sits on the couch in horror. Earl says that he walks in and he tells her all he wanted was the lawnmower. She says, Earl, I'll get you a lawnmower. He thinks maybe he felt he was being lied to again because he thought that she had looked from Earl to Mike and seemed to roll her eyes. And that pissed Earl off all over again. That's when he shot Mike.
Literally out of nowhere. He's talking to Toddie, who he's pissed off with. Mike is just there.
Just lighting up a smoke. He's just chilling.
And he gets shot in the eye.
It's Monday morning.
Point blank. Is literally right in front of him and he shoots him right in the eye.
Dead.
Oh my God.
Our prosecutor, James Gray, says that Mike Wells had worked at Walmart and that he was an only child to parents who ran a farm nearby. Basically, he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And had just been returning a movie that he had borrowed from Toddie that morning.
Oh my gosh. Talk about wrong place and wrong time.
Literally. He was just starting to light up a smoke when he was shot in the eye by Earl.
And this guy.
Dead.
Literally looked like a high school principal.
Yeah. He looked like a nerd. When they said he worked at Walmart, I'm like, yeah, he did.
It checks out. But like, he looked like such a wholesome guy. Yeah. It just was like. Just sucks. Like, he really was in the fucking wrong place at the wrong time. If he would have, think about this. If he would have just stayed home for 20 more minutes, he would have probably came upon the murder or seen something was going on or hear something was going on and not fucking come up to the door. But he just happened to be in her house. Ugh.
Fucking crazy. Well, Earl says, I really liked Mike. And they used to go out and shoot pool together. So the producer asks, well, then why did you shoot him? And he's like, quote, I don't know. She looked at me funny, I guess. End quote. So Toddie provoked all of this in his eyes.
No remorse. Like he, none. Even though these people are his friends, he does not care that he killed them. He does not care. Even today, it's like, you don't look back and say, wow, I wish I wouldn't have done that, and I feel horrible that I killed them. Right. He's just like, well, I don't know.
I don't know.
It just, whoops, kind of just happened.
I'm so confused.
He says it a lot, though.
Hair flip.
He says it a lot, though. Like, he has no idea.
No. And he doesn't care to, like, dig deep.
No. Right? Not at all.
Dr. Barday weighs in and says that he believes that Earl walked in with this mindset of being a potent, gun-toting, dangerous guy. You know, from his, like, younger days, right? But then he perceives Toddie as being disrespecting him by rolling her eyes, and his whole bubble is blown up, and he had to take it just one step further.
Yep.
To kind of rectify it.
Absolutely.
Earl remembers freezing after shooting Mike, like, kind of stunned for a minute. Like, holy shit, I kind of just did that.
And he probably didn't think he would actually do that.
Well, and again, he's been drinking. So maybe it was kind of like a knee-jerk reaction. Yeah. That it was like, holy fuck, like, A, great shot, because that was dead in the eye. But also,
well, and
fuck.
Now he's probably also trying to, like, holy fuck, what am I going to do now?
Kind of, yeah. But he can't show fear because that's right. Not how he is.
Right.
Toddie asks him if he was crazy, and then she starts to try to run out of the house. Well, that's when Earl kind of snaps out of his daze, and he shoots a couple times in her direction to try to get her to stop.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine me shot at and running out of your house?
I can't imagine.
9:11 in the morning.
I can't even imagine someone storming in my house and starting to shoot up the place.
No.
Like, that literally seems out of a fucking movie. It doesn't even seem like that would ever happen. You know
right.
what I mean?
Right.
Like, he just storms in with his gun and shoots the person on the couch in the face that has nothing to do with the situation, and then starts shooting his best friend.
Over a lawnmower.
And trailer.
He really liked yard work, you guys. Now, outside, Toddie runs to the car that Earl had parked in her driveway. Earl's 21-year-old girlfriend, Angela. Oh, yeah, by the way, she's 21. He's 51.
I don't get it.
Ew.
I don't get it.
Ew. She's still sitting inside of the car with the engine running. So she clearly thought this was going to be just a quick stop.
My God.
Prosecutor James Gray believes that he thinks Angela was kind of shell-shocked and really didn't want any part of this. Like, she was not involved as far as, like, you know, a partner in this crime.
No, I think she was
caught up.
She was caught up in it, and she didn't know what was going to happen. But, okay, I have
and
to ask.
And she's a child.
I also have to ask the question, though. What did she think was going to happen with him walking into her house? She knew he was angry with a handgun. Like, did she just think that, okay, he's a good guy. He just needs to, like, scare her.
Like, maybe he'll flash it.
Something.
Yes.
But, like, she had to have heard the shots. Like, there's no way she didn't hear them.
Right.
Shots are loud. She was right outside in the vehicle.
She was probably, she had the music on really loud.
And at that point, you're in the middle of nowhere. Where do you go? It's not like you can get out of the car and go find someone. Like, they're literally in fields, like farm fields.
Yeah.
Where are you going to go?
Nowhere. Well, Toddie comes running out of the house and gets into the car and tries to drive it down her long driveway, like backing it out.
Oh my gosh.
Earl comes out and starts shooting into the air to kind of freak her out, stop her, I don't know. Suddenly, the car stops, and it gets hung up on a log or a post or something in the driveway.
Of course it would.
Now she's stuck. Like, she cannot go anywhere. Earl walks up to the car very calmly, speaking to Toddie, per Angela's side of the story. Angela says that they begin kind of reminiscing about old times, and somehow Earl convinces Toddie to go back into her house with him. Like, we're gonna patch things up.
Like, you just watched this fucking dude go absolutely fucking crazy and shoot your guys' friend in the face point blank with a gun, and you are willing to go into a house by yourself with him? What?
I mean, if it's somebody you knew for 30 years, would
fucking
you even...
Fucking never.
No, I know.
Fucking never.
But, like, she probably never saw it coming.
I just...
But also, like, maybe also...
The trust is gone at that point. You just fucking watched him shoot someone for no reason.
But did you? You know what I mean? Like, your brain could also be sitting there being like, no.
In my mind, I'd be thinking, okay, he's mad at me.
Right.
And I'm still alive. And
right.
he killed him.
Who did
for
nothing.
Seemingly no reason.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't he want to kill me too? And...
Agreed.
I know that he killed him.
Right.
So maybe he wants to get rid of me because I could be a witness. A witness. To what he did. Yeah. You know what I mean? Oh, Toddy. And I don't want to like blame her for like not thinking this through, but never. I would never ever go back inside. There's no way you can make me.
Now, according to Angela, Earl and Toddy walked back into the house arm in arm. So they're like,
buddy buddies again.
Buddy buddy. Dr. Bardet tells us that psychopathic individuals know exactly how to act. Loving, caring, interested, not driven by the need to have intimacy with somebody, but to manipulate somebody and play act into getting whatever it is that they want.
Of course. I mean, look at what he did. He was so pissed off running out of the house. And all of a sudden, when she gets caught up, he flips that switch.
Yep.
He's like, Toddy, I just wanted to talk to you. You know, they reminisce about, come on, we've been friends for 30 years. You can trust me. He probably was saying shit like that. You know what I mean? Trying to gain her trust back again.
Yep.
Because he knew he had to finish the job. And he was still fucking pissed at her. And he still wanted something from her.
Right.
He still hasn't gotten anything from her. And now he's killed someone when he didn't really need to.
Right.
Like, that didn't make him feel better. Like, he didn't kill the person he wanted to kill yet, you know? Right,
because he wasn't going after this as a murder thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't like he was fueled for the pure purpose of murdering somebody.
Right. It's scary. How did she not know that his anger went from here to 100 down to zero? All of a sudden, everything's good. We're good. We're friends.
We're like, best friends.
That should be a fucking red flag. He's still fucking mad at you, dude. Like, he's still mad. And now he needs to calm himself down because you almost got away.
You are fucked.
Poor Toddy.
Hot Toddy. Earl says that the two of them talked for a while, and he told her that he wanted the drugs back. He'd used violence often as a drug dealer in order to convince people to pay. So I think that's kind of where he was planning to go with this whole thing. Scare her, you know, wave a gun around. Maybe rough her up. Who knows? Maybe pistol whip her. I don't know. But basically, to get what he needed back. He says that he was always ready if he had to be. He says that back in the day, he had even helped out other dealers who needed help when it came time for collecting payment on drugs that they had fronted to people. And that they would play, you know, good cop, bad cop. And he would play bad cop. He does tell us that sometimes he became the victim. One time, a girl had called him over to a hotel that she was staying in and asked him to bring some of his stuff with him. A guy had been waiting for Earl behind the door with a baseball bat, and as soon as he walked in, he was hit over the head and robbed. He does tell us that he had suffered some head trauma, and he had some scars from that night, and tons of scans had shown that he had damage in the frontal lobe of his brain. But he wasn't totally sure if it had to do with that specific incident or a hard life of drugs and alcohol.
Well, come on. That had to have been a factor in why he had that damage. He was beaten with a baseball bat.
Yeah.
If that guy got one swing on his head, that does damage. You know, I mean, he was completely unconscious. But could you imagine?
No.
Living that type of life, being a drug dealer, and having that shit happen to you. No. You don't know when people are going to turn on you and fuck you over and steal all of your shit and fucking beat you to a bloody pulp. Like,
no, I've watched Blow. I know how that all goes out. I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
Dr. Bardet reminds us that the frontal lobe is the area of the brain that controls executive functions, inhibits our impulses, controls judgment and self-reflection. If damaged, you're much more likely to act on impulse without self-control or self-reflection.
Yeah.
We're now back at the house, and Earl goes on to explain that Toddy leads him to the bedroom, and under the bed is a pound and a half of speed, totaling around $25,000 worth. She was kneeling down, grabbing the stuff, trying to pull it out from under the bed, but she never got back up, because Earl shoots her 3 times in the head. That's 30 years of friendship, right there, gone.
And I think, too, he knew he had to kill her. Even if he got what he wanted from her, she had seen too much now.
And she disrespected him.
Exactly. Like, he was going to take her entire stash, all that she had, over a fucking lawnmower. Why wouldn't she go to the police after the fact? He knew he had to get rid of her. And it's sad. It's because she trusted him still. She trusted him enough to get on her hands and knees and try to pick this stuff up while he had a gun in his hand. It's sad. The documentary crew asked Earl if he felt bad, and all he could say was, quote, "I don't know how I felt," end quote. So, no, that's a no, apparently.
Yeah, not bad.
But he did make this statement that he's mad at Toddie for not keeping her word. It sounded like he was still mad at her to this very day.
I think
like,
he is.
He's still pissed off at the fact that she made him kill her. You know what I mean? He's still blaming her for the fact that he murdered her. Because if she would have just kept her word, they'd still be friends on the farm, having a great life. But now he has to sit and rot in prison while she's dead.
Well, and I don't think it even has to do with the fact that he's in prison. I think it's the fact that she's dead and it's her fault because she should have known better not to push him to that point.
Right.
But she didn't.
Well, and he goes on to say, quote, "Why did she have to put us both in that position?" End quote.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
Right there.
Like, I can't imagine doing something to someone else and saying, "Why did they have to put us in that position for me to do that?" Like, I'm sorry. We all have decisions to make. Mm-hmm. You get to choose. If you are going to choose the wrong way, I'm sorry. That's your fucking problem. That's your problem, not the other person's problem. Yes, we all make mistakes. We do things that we shouldn't have done. And maybe Toddie should have just fucking gotten his lawnmower to him. Maybe. Sure. Did she deserve to die for that? No. But he still blames her. It's that narcissism, I think. He just cannot accept the blame on himself because he doesn't believe that he would have ever done it had she just done and said what she was going to do, you know? I don't know. I hate it. I hate the way he keeps bringing it up. He keeps saying it. I'm just so mad at Toddie. If she just would have kept her word, none of this would have happened. Why did she have to put us in this position? It's just repetitive throughout this whole interview with him. He says it over and over and over. It's like, shut the fuck up, Earl.
Yeah.
This is you. This is your issue, not Toddie's.
Some people really take their lawn care seriously.
That is true.
Life or death.
That is true. Dr. Bardet says that he doesn't get the sense of remorse with Earl at all when he talks about killing Toddie. It really makes him wonder if he had any empathy at all. Earl goes on to tell us that he thinks these things were out of his control. He says the script was already written and he was just following the script as if this was a movie scene and he was just an actor in a movie.
Yeah.
It's like, get the fuck out of here, Earl. Like, shut the fuck up. I've had enough.
It reminds me of a saying my husband always says, get off the tracks when the train's coming through.
Yeah.
Because it's like it's already set in motion and it cannot be stopped.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, god damn, it's annoying. It's really annoying because he just beats the hammer on the head with this one and he keeps saying it over and over and over and over and over again. It just never ends. Now, after shooting Toddie, he goes back out to his car and goes home. When he got home, he mixed up a really strong dose of speed and injected it. The documentary crew asked why he did that, and his response was, quote, "Well, I guess I had all those drugs. I might as well, you know," end quote. Again, he can't admit that maybe he was trying to forget about what just happened and relieve himself of having to think about that, right? He just killed his best friend, his closest confidant, the person he trusted probably the most in his life. That'll mess you up a little bit inside.
A little bit.
Now, Earl started doing drugs back in high school when he was 17 years old. At one point, he used drugs every day for 8 years straight.
Damn.
Okay. And this is in no way shaming drug addicts or anything like that. But to me, that sounds absolutely exhausting.
Yeah.
Like, so tiring.
Especially, you're talking speed.
And 8 years straight.
Like, it's a wonder he doesn't look older than he is.
Yeah. Like,
you know what I mean?
Well, especially with meth.
Right.
Like
how does he still have his teeth?
It really messes people up. So that is pretty crazy that he has his teeth left and they don't look too horrible.
How does his hair look so shiny?
Who the hell knows? It's the butt soap. In prison. Now, he wasn't just using meth either. He was also heavily drinking. He was drinking a fifth and a half of 100-proof schnapps a day while doing meth at the same time. This really gives me a stomachache. Like, I just...
Why, when I think schnapps, do I immediately think of, like, this little girl? I think, like, peach schnapps.
That's exactly what I thought of.
Like, this little girly drink. And I'm like, why are you bragging about drinking that shit?
But when he said 100-proof, I'm like... Ew. That has to smell bad. That has to stink when you open that bottle. Like,
yeah.
Like rubbing alcohol. That's like cheap. Nasty. Now, just minutes after killing Toddy, Earl is already starting to feel the effects of the meth kicking in while he's at home. Our Dent County prosecutor, James Gray, says that back at Toddy's, her boyfriend, Eddie Starks, had been hiding in the closet. Dun, dun, dun!
I know. So this is where it came in, where the guy escapes the house and calls police.
Yeah, yeah. Her boyfriend.
Y'all forgot about that part.
Yeah, you? Yeah. Her boyfriend had been hiding in the closet because he was in the back room and heard Earl come in.
Yep.
Fucking hid. That's smart as shit.
Yeah.
Sergeant Henry Folsom tells us that when Eddie heard the gunshot, he hid in the closet in one of the spare bedrooms. He heard Toddy getting questioned about where her drugs were, and that's when he heard several more shots. So this is when Toddy was killed.
Yeah.
He didn't leave the closet until he thought everyone had left. I'm sure he stayed there quite a while.
Oh, yeah.
He wanted to make sure that Earl wasn't hanging around just in case.
Yeah.
Now, Prosecutor James Gray explains that when Eddie felt safe enough to come out, he saw the horrible, horrible scene. Mike's body was in the living room and Toddy was on the floor in the back room. He was shocked finding his girlfriend of 5 years dead on the floor. Remember, they both lived in a very rural area, so it's not like there were houses next door or, you know, an immediate neighbor they could go to or someone that could have possibly witnessed this or
right,
seen or heard or called 911. No one was really around. So Eddie had to run to the house, the closest house that was down the road, and he called police. He immediately told police that it was Earl Forrest who had killed Toddy and Mike. Deputies head right over to secure the crime scene while the sheriff and chief deputy head over to Earl's house to search for the killer. The sheriff and chief deputy Joanne Barnes were aware of who Earl was and had dealings with him previously, so they did know where he lived. They didn't even need to find his address. They knew exactly where he lived. Now, Earl normally drove a truck, but when they had pulled into his residence, there was only a passenger car in the driveway. So they thought he may have already been fleeing, right? He might have already tried to been getting out of state or trying to get away from the crime scene as far as he possibly could. The car they see in the driveway was his girlfriend, Angela's car. And at the time, they thought they should approach the residence and talk to whoever was there. Because again, they didn't think that Earl was there. They thought he had had left. So they're like, okay, we're probably safe going up. We can probably talk to him. There's probably no real threat at this point.
Yep.
When they knocked on the door, Angela was the one who opened it. Angela had asked them what they wanted, and Joanne asked if Earl was there. Earl tells us that they were able to see the cops pull up, and they were sitting right in the front room of the house near the large window. So they kind of knew what was going to be happening here.
Yeah.
And he knew that they were looking for him, so that's why he made Angela open the door. After the police asked to see him, he went to the door and just started shooting. There was no conversation at all.
Sergeant Folsom claims that this was actually more of an ambush. He says that Earl was standing behind Angela and began firing upon Deputy Joanne Barnes and Sheriff Bob Wolford immediately.
Just the violence.
Well, I mean, he knows that he's fucked, you know? Why not go out in a hailstorm? I don't know.
Like, guns blazing? Just going to start shooting random-ass people? That, yeah, they're going to try to, like, fucking take you in and put you in prison, but either way you're going there. It's just sad.
Yeah, well, death by cop is what I think he was originally kind of thinking it was going
to be. Yeah, I guess he wanted to do a full-on shootout, so hopefully he would die as well. You know, that's kind of what I think he assumed anyway.
Deputy Sheriff Joanne Barnes was shot at point-blank range and never had a chance to react. Prosecutor James Gray tells us that she was both hit in the head and the abdomen and immediately went down. The sheriff was slightly hit in the abdomen and began returning fire as he was backing away. The sheriff continued to exchange fire with Forrest and topped off his weapon, hiding behind his patrol car as like a shield, and began preparing himself in case Earl advanced. He also called for backup and an ambulance. Within minutes, 7 law enforcement vehicles showed up. Salem Police Department, Dent County Sheriff's Department, and Highway Patrol.
That is amazing.
That is amazing.
Minutes.
It's amazing.
Especially when it's kind of like in the middle of nowhere.
I was going to say, in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, they were there quick.
They got nothing else going
they
on.
They had nothing else to
They're
do
They're all just
day.
Like chilling. You getting a call? No. Have you gotten a call? No, not yet. You getting a call? When he and his partner arrived, Sergeant Folsom says that he saw several law enforcement hiding behind their vehicles, riddled with bullet holes. So there's like just, I mean, it looks like just a war scene out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
What was burned into his mind, however, was Deputy Joanne Barnes laying there helpless on the ground between Forrest and the police. He knew that he had to try to save her, but she was directly in the line of fire. Prosecutor Gray says that Deputy Barnes was from the area. She actually had ran the Lenox Rural Fire District. She was a widow without any children. She ran 7 cattle farms, and she also served as a deputy. So her whole life was devoted to public service.
Yeah. And just a wonderful woman.
Well, right. And it sounds like she didn't even need her job. She just, like, she would have done it for free. She just really liked doing it.
And how many people do you actually, like, meet in this world that are like that?
None.
And unfortunately, she was caught in the line of fire and was killed for no reason.
Again, wrong place, wrong time.
God, it's horrible.
It is. Earl says that he was standing there at his front door just shooting. And at one point, he actually was shot in the mouth from one of the sheriffs. And that is why he says he has no more lips left. If you can kind of see when he's talking.
Yeah.
There's something going on, but I couldn't really, like, figure it out until he explains it.
What I think happened is it cut out a chunk of his bottom lip and they had to, like, sew his lip together. Yeah. So it's almost like his lip is, like, smaller on the bottom because it had to be, like, stitched.
Yeah.
So now he has a scar that kind of, like, indents his bottom lip a little bit.
Right. He says that his gun, his handgun, had been hit as well, so he grabbed for his .22 rifle. He says that at one point, he looks down to reload, and when he looks back up, the world had radically changed. Everything was golden, and it looked like there was, like, golden, hay-like long grass blowing in this beautiful summer breeze. Everything is just, like, serene and
peaceful.
Peaceful and gorgeous. He says the weird thing was, it was December and there was 5 inches of snow on the ground. He realizes that he had been hallucinating. As soon as he snapped out of it, he just kept on firing. And at this point, he realized he had no further plans for the future and figured this is how he's going down.
Yep. Sergeant Folsom decided that they needed to go save Joanne Barnes. So they had cut through a fence and started driving through the property hidden from sight. Their plan was to kind of sneak up behind the house and kind of sneak up on the sides of the house, him and his partner.
Yeah. They wanted to get to Joanne.
Exactly. Now, when they did this and when they got close to his house, they couldn't see any movement from the house and it was actually really quiet. They were each on the front corners of the house when Henry called out to Joanne. He wanted to see if she was able to get up, if she was conscious, if she was still breathing, you know, and Joanne didn't respond. But at this point, he did hear some movement in the house. After he had called out, he did hear some movement from inside. He ordered them to come out of the house with their hands up. Earl is not going down without a fight. Dr. Bardet says that at this point, Earl had turned on autopilot. He truly believes that this is a script and the ending has already been written for him. It's like he's an actor and he's watching a movie playing itself out. As Earl reloads his rifle, he stops when he hears something. Earl says he heard crying. He realized that Angela had been hit. She had been shot twice in the side. He decides to finally surrender. Now he's starting to feel, I don't know.
I think a sense of duty in, like, protecting her.
Dr. Bardet thinks that it wasn't really about Angela being his girlfriend, but more of what her symbolic value was to him. Angela was an outsider that was a friend to him. She was a part of the good Earl, and now the bad Earl had caused her to get hurt. And he believes it created a conflict for Earl, because he knew that there was still a little bit of good inside of him, and he had to have felt something for her, right? And felt like maybe she shouldn't have been a part of this.
Well, she
shouldn't
have gotten hurt. She totally got caught up.
Yes, absolutely.
And he got her caught up in this.
Exactly.
Because it wasn't like Toddie, where she, you know, she pushed the buttons.
Right.
Mike, he had just been there. But Angela, now she's hurt.
Yeah.
And I think he feels a bit of like a duty to kind of protect her.
Absolutely. I think so too.
I mean, she's also a child.
Seriously. Earl then crawls halfway out his front door and just lays face down on the porch. He remembers seeing his welcome mat that said horse country and a large pile of blood. It was Joanne Barnes bleeding on his front porch.
And probably part of his face.
Probably, yes. He had gotten shot at this point. Sergeant Folsom ran to go attend to Joanne and check on her, but she was not responsive after receiving the two gunshot wounds. They airlift Joanne to a major trauma center in St. Louis, then Angela, and then Earl. I love how they go in that order. Joanne Barnes first, Angela, and then Earl. And Earl. Angela did recover from her wounds. Deputy Barnes did not die right away, but was never able to regain consciousness again. She died later on that day at the hospital. There was a large reaction from the community after they found out that the sheriff had been shot and the deputy had been killed.
Who shot the sheriff? Sorry, no.
No. No, Amy.
No. Wine.
Wine does weird things to us.
It's wine and allergies. I just don't even know what to say.
Prosecutor James Gray tells us that her funeral was incredible. Officers came from every county in the state of Missouri and even other states. Her funeral procession went on for miles. Mm-hmm. Earl was charged with 3 counts of murder. His public defender argued that these murders were not premeditated and therefore he should only be guilty of second-degree murder. Fucking huge eye roll. I know that, like,
that's his
defenders
job.
Have to do that, public defenders, but still, give me a fucking break.
You showed
it
up.
It wasn't
with a
premeditated.
Gun. That's premeditated.
It is fucking 1,000% premeditated. He was pissed at her. Of course he wanted to hurt her. Being that more than one person was murdered, it wasn't even a close call. It was a really easy decision to make. On October 8th of 2004, the jury only needs 3 hours to reach a verdict. They find Earl Forrest guilty of first-degree murder and sentence him to 3 counts of death by lethal injection. Henry Folsom says that in the end, there are no winners. The hurt is still there, and even though justice was served, people are still devastated by what happened. During sentencing, Earl makes no statement to the court. Earl tells us that at that moment, he had no emotion. He wishes the whole thing never happened. A lot of innocent people were involved with this. He is still mad at Toddie. Why couldn't she keep her word? Ugh! I couldn't hear it again. Like, I was getting so irritated with him. I'm like, shut the fuck up, Earl. We get that you're still pissed at Toddie, but I'm sorry. This is your fucking fault.
Yeah.
There's no reason for you to be mad at Toddie anymore. You wanted a fucking lawnmower, and you killed 3 people over a lawnmower. Get over yourself.
Yep. Ain't mowing no lawns now.
Right.
Actually, he's being mowed.
Right.
Maybe, if he's buried. I don't know.
Prosecutor Gray finds it really hard to believe that Earl would actually blame Toddie for these 3 murders. He didn't have to kill anyone, but he made the decision to. Dr. Bardet thinks it shows that he has psychopathic tendencies. The tendency to externalize blame and to not take any personal responsibility. I swear, we see this almost on every single case we've done. Like, over half of them, they don't want to take blame at all. They think that it's someone else's fault. Someone else made them do it. If circumstances were different, it would have never happened. Blah, 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 blah. It goes on. The list goes on and on.
It all boils down to not being spanked as a child.
Yes, we haven't heard that one in a while.
Participation awards. 2 things. 2 of them.
Yes, yes. Earl had set out that morning to get revenge on his oldest friend, but ended up killing 3 people. Their loss is felt throughout the entire community in Dent County. Susan Del Mastro comes back and says none of this had to happen, not with Toddie, Mike, or Joanne. On-screen text tells us that Earl Forrest is due to be executed in 2015. I did a little bit of side research, and I did find out that he was actually executed on May 11th of 2016. So, shit.
Dead.
He actually was executed.
Dead.
That seemingly doesn't happen as often as you would think it does when people are on death row.
Right.
But yeah, that is the story of Earl Forrest.
That was a good one.
I mean,
holy fuck.
Just strange. We don't do cases like this where people are killing people they actually know over stupid, mindless shit.
And not like a lover's quarrel.
No, this wasn't a lover's quarrel. This was just friends and he just was pissed. It's like, what the fuck is wrong with you, dude?
Ego.
For sure.
Ego. Well, thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of Sheer Crime. Don't forget to tune in next time when we're going to be covering another episode in the Netflix series Catching Killers, this one on Eileen Wuornos.
Ooh, another big one.
She's a big one. Like what, the first or only female serial killer? First.
Yeah, I did. Well, so I've been.
She's not the first, though.
I've done research on her previously, and from what they can say, she would be. But there has been other, like, speculated cases way back in, like, the 1800s True. Of another female serial killer. And, you know, we have that old lady that was killing people
in her farm,
in her backyard or whatever. The one that was, like, a caregiver. So there's a few others that we obviously know of. But, like, she was kind of, like, the big one. Big one that kind of started it all for female serial killers.
Right. Yeah, she's a good one. And if any of you have watched that movie Monster with Charlize Theron, that was such a good movie.
Yeah. But
that kind of showed her life.
For sure. And just to preface, she's not a good one. She still sucks ass. But.
Right. It's a good.
Intriguing and interesting story. Episode. Right. Yes. Yes. Right. Just to preface, we don't like murderers or serial killers.
No.
We find them interesting and intriguing.
In any way. And we're not like fangirling over that.
Right. Right. Exactly.
In the meantime, if you have any that you'd like to hear us do, you can always send us an email, requests@sheercrimepodcast.com. You can join our Facebook group, the Sheer Crime Podcast Discussion Group. We are sharing all the fun things on there.
And just updates on cases. That's one of my favorite things, is like updates on old cases or new findings or new shows to watch. Love it all.
Yeah, there's been a lot of like, have you seen this yet?
Yeah.
Up there. And I like that.
And it literally helps me add things to my list, because half the time I just watch the same rerun shit over and over again. And then I'm like, oh shit, there's that new documentary on Netflix that just came out that I want to see, because everyone's like going fucking crazy over it.
Yeah.
So love it. Keep it up.
Keep it up. You can also join us on Instagram, Sheer_crime_podcast, Twitter @SheerCrimePod. And TikTok @SheerCrimePodcast. As always, we love hearing from you. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you have a moment and you haven't yet, go out and write and review us.
Please.
Yes, we haven't seen one in a little while. We still love reading them.
Actually.
Do we have a new one? Do. Shut up.
We just got a new one. Okay, since we're on the topic, I'm going to read it really quick.
Yes.
It's titled Mamacitas.
Ooh. I'm so excited. I did not read this one yet.
It's a 5-star, of course. And it says, you ladies are freaking awesome. So glad I found this podcast. Try Mamacitas. I don't like seltzer or anything, but this one has changed my mind. It's with tequila.
Ooh.
Ooh, I love drink suggestions. Thank you.
That's awesome. Yeah. Okay. No. Mamacitas. We'll take a lookout for that one.
Yes.
Take a lookout. We will look out for that one. Good God. It's been a long night. Until then, stay safe, stay sane, and remember, never run with scissors. Bye, guys.
See ya.